You ready?
Showtime.
On May 3rd, summer starts with the Fall Guy.
What are you doing later?
Let's drink a spicy margarita.
Make some bad decisions.
Yes!
Audiences are falling in love with the most entertaining film of the year.
Fall Guy.
Fall Guy.
Fall Guy. That's what the poster said.
See Ryan Gosling and Emily Blunt in the movie critics say exists to make you happy.
Trying to make it out?
Nope.
Because I don't either. It's not what I'm into right now.
What are you into?
Talking.
Yeah.
The Fall Guy. Only in theaters May 3rd. Rated PG-13.
Welcome to episode 63 of the Rex Chapman Show with my super dope homeboy from that flex town, Josh Hopkins. What up, Josh?
What up, Rex Everett Chapman?
How are you, buddy? Brooklyn. Brooklyn's in the house. Brooklyn's good. All good there. How's Austin?
Great. Great. It's beautiful here.
Yeah?
It's beautiful. Yeah. What up, are we?
It looks pretty. It's 63. 63. You know any famous 63s?
Y.A. Tittle.
Wow, very well done. Mm-hmm, mm-hmm. I know one. Former great player in the NFL, and then ended up being the NFLPA president, Gene Upshaw.
Yeah, great call. He did his whole biography too.
That's right.
That's wonderful. Uh-huh. Yeah. If I had to remember, I'd go Dr. J. Rex Chapman.
Yeah, I would go Dr. J. Chris Harrison.
All right. Okay.
Uh-huh. 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 I pulled that one.
Yeah.
Former Kentucky player.
That was a great call.
Uh-huh.
That was.
Thank you.
Of course, we always like to inform our listeners about what's going on and interesting things we may have read.
Yeah.
So let's do our book club. Rex, what'd you read this week?
Josh, I didn't read anything. Not a thing.
What?
Nope, nothing. I was planning on it being a big reading week. And out of nowhere, it just turned into a big, big, big week of TV.
Oh, God. You know, I got a similar story.
Really?
But yeah, that's what happened to me 2 weeks ago. But this week, it happened again. So I didn't really big TV stuff too. Yeah. So
okay.
That's my book club. Yeah. Okay. How about this? We fell back. The clocks screwing me up a little bit, huh?
What are you talking about? The clocks. You fall back with the clocks.
Spring forward, daylight savings time.
All right.
I think it delineates the worst part of the year from the best part of the year. As soon as you fall back, it gets dark at 5. It starts getting cold. Everything sucks. And then school's the worst and jobs are worse and everything depressed. And then as soon as it springs forward, starts getting better out. You're feeling better about yourself. This is the tough time. We gotta stick together during these tough times. Also, this is the last time, I think. After this, it's never going to fall back again.
Are the computers going to work?
Ooh, yeah. Spring back 2K.
I'm confused a little bit on the whole. I like how you try to fit it all into a little spring back, fall. You can spring forward, right? You can fall forward.
You can.
So I don't get it. It's a bullshit saying. It is a bullshit saying. Spring back, fall, spring, whatever it is.
See, it's bullshit. You can't even do it.
Because it makes so little sense.
Okay, how about?
I think we do away with it this year. This is the last one.
Awesome. Well, it's good because my suggestion is going to be next year is like fall, change your clocks back 1 hour at midnight or at 2 a.m. and you can get more drinks 1 more hour out before the bar closes, and then spring, change your clock again, but it gets lighter out and then stuff's fun.
Cracks me up.
Catchy. That's catchy.
That's not catchy at all. But what's funny to me is there are, like, where I grew up in Kentucky is Central Time. Where you grew up in Kentucky is Eastern Time.
That's right.
And in Kentucky, what do we call that? Down in our neck of the woods, we call it slow and fast time.
Yeah.
They're on slow time. Well, what time are they on? Well, no, they're on fast time.
Right.
They're on slow time.
Because it went right through your town practically. That's tough. Yeah.
Oh, so crazy. Well, Bud, we've got a terrific guest this
Yeah,
week.
We do. I'm excited.
Sharpshooter from way back, younger than we are. Of course, everyone's younger than we are, but no, we have a terrific guest. You want to get to him? We have college basketball analyst for SEC Network, Sirius XM, ESPNU, and SEC Radio, former two-time All-SEC, all-time three-point scorer, and Hall of Famer for the Arkansas Razorbacks. Welcome, Patrick Henry Bradley. Welcome, Pat.
Thank you, Rex. Thank you, Josh. It is it's extra special. You know, Big Blue Nation is in the house, so anytime I get to represent the Razorback Red against the forces of Big Blue Nation, it's a good day.
It's everybody's Super Bowl. Yeah, we know this.
Well, Rex, the thing is, we used to play Kentucky on Super Bowl Sunday. So it was, I was there, my freshman year was 95, 96. And Arkansas got into the SEC in 92. I think it was the 92, 93. I think it was 92. So CBS did the contract with Kentucky and Arkansas to play. It ended up being like right before the Super Bowl. Every year. It was like three, four, five. I say every year, but it was like 4 or 5 years. So it was literally like the Super Bowl playing.
Yeah, that was your Super Bowl. It was Kentucky's Super Bowl too. It was the Super Bowl.
Yeah. I'm sure a lot of Kentucky fans were irked because Arkansas came into the league and it happened to be but the greatest 5-year run the Hogs have had, you know, since the last 2 years going back to back. So, I'm sure Kentucky fans got their eyes opened a little bit when the Hogs got into the SEC.
Josh and I were just talking about that before you came on. Cause when I was growing up, Arkansas, I think, was in the SWAC.
Southwest Conference, which doesn't exist anymore.
So right, but shortly after I left, Arkansas joins the SEC and dominated. Nolan's team just coming in there, 40 minutes of hell. Fun basketball to watch. I see you back there. Let me see that. Love the
Coach
guy.
Coach Richardson bobblehead.
Love the guy.
Yeah.
Big fan. All right. Well, let's talk about you a little bit, Pat. Growing up for someone whose middle name is Everett, what was it like growing up in Everett, Mass?
Well, Everett's I grew up about 4 miles from the Boston Garden, right? So it's right north. I mean, it's, from the city limits, it might be a mile north of Boston. So it was fortunately a huge sports town. And, when you go from Boston into Everett, the sign says we are the gateway city because we were one of the first cities that was right there next to Boston. So, we had a lot of it's changing. I mean, it's truly a melting pot. But it's a city that's always changing. And sports was number one that kind of brought the community together. So growing up, it was baseball, football, basketball. And fortunately for me, growing up in the 80s, the Celtics, Bird. Yeah. I mean, it was just who everybody wanted to be. So
you got him back there on your shelf, right? You got Larry back there?
The old starting lineup.
Yeah, Larry. See, I want to ask you about
that's
that.
Correct. Is
the old, that old from the garden, old garden?
Part of it.
Brick. My buddy. Really? My buddy who I played at Arkansas with, Guy Whitney, who actually had one of the greatest dunks in SEC history. He stole that when they were knocked out of Boston Garden. He stole one of the bricks for me.
That's great.
I love it.
He gave it to me. So,
no, but yeah, I want to ask. I want to ask about Larry, just real quick. You know, Josh and I are from Kentucky. He's from Lexington. I'm from Owensboro. But, you know, Larry was a big deal. He was a few years older, I guess 7 or 8, 9 years older. But I played against him. I didn't like Larry. Like, I didn't, growing up, he played at Indiana State. Fine. He went to the Celtics. I thought, this guy's overrated. He doesn't, you know, he doesn't play defense. He can't jump, all that stuff. All the way through college, I didn't like Larry Bird. I get to the NBA and step out on the floor with him the first time. I thought he was only like 6'6", 6'7". No, 6'10", big as a doorway, big as a doorway, talking shit, and loved him ever since. But I want to know, what was it about him, Pat? You know, you're a kid from Massachusetts.
Yeah.
This is a kid, the hick from French Lick. What was it about Larry that the Boston people and the people of that region loved and loved?
And I think it was, so, you know, we all consider ourselves blue collar, you know, those, all those terms. And the Celtics have always been great. Bill Russell's team's obviously the best. You know, Bill Russell should be included in everybody's top five players of all time. But they had a dip. The Celtics had a few years where they weren't what they were when Bill Russell was there. And you know, Red Auerbach was still there. So I think the combination of a guy that was so different than everybody else. And I felt that when I went to school from Boston to Fayetteville, Arkansas, I felt how they kind of like, I was so different from everybody. And I think that's kind of what it was with Larry Bird. It was like, he's talking different, the big curly hair at the time. And then you combine that with they start winning on an elite level. And, you know, most of us don't have the athleticism.
Right.
Either, like, you know.
Right.
So, you know, you identify with a player, you know, maybe who doesn't have the athleticism. So for me personally, I, you know, throughout my playing career, I noticed some of the little anticipation. You know, part of it was like, wow, all they do is talk about this guy has no foot speed, can't jump, can't do this, can't do that, can't do that. But he's winning NBA championships and MVPs with the Celtics. Yeah. So you almost say to yourself, like, wow, okay, what is he doing to be able to reach that level of success? So I think
the relatable, more relatable, like Stephen Curry right now, you know, not everybody can jump and don't, everybody can shoot it. They think,
right.
Right. The relatability though, it's perfect.
And I think that's important for a lot of young players to, like I said, it influenced my life because I think sports figures are so important because, you know, they give you that sense that, you know, you can come from where they came from and actually reach your dream. Now, you're right. I think Larry at 6'10", that's something that, you know, or even 6'11". I mean, dude was massive. But, you know, those things are, it's very important for young people to, even both you guys, you and Josh, for where you guys came from, for young people to look at it and say, they came from where I came from. I can get there too. So Larry being from a small town, I consider Everett a small town. So that was the relatability part, like you said.
So speaking of fish out of water, how the hell did Nolan get you down to Arkansas? How did that happen? And then what was that in the 90s, the early 90s, to go from Massachusetts to Fayetteville? That had to be quite a culture shock. Tell us about it.
It was wild. It was, so I was playing in the AU tournament. It was the national AU tournament. And we play, so all the coaches are there at the main court. And if you keep winning, you keep at the main court.
Right.
So we as a team, we had a really good team. Just about everybody went Division One, but we, you know, didn't have any super high recruits. So Coach Richardson is there, as Coach K was there, all of them. Matter of fact, he was recruiting Ron Mercer when Ron was playing for the Tennessee Travelers. Mm-hmm. So we keep playing, and our team keeps winning. And fortunately for me at the time, we had 9 scholarships. My freshman year, we had like 9 new guys. So he could take a chance on a slow white kid from Everett because we had Derek Hood, McDonald's All-American in the class. We had 2, top 5 junior college guys.
Wow.
So really, the truth of it was our team kept winning. Nothing flashy. And Coach said, he looked at it, he was like, I just like the kids' anticipation, understanding how to win games. And, you know, I think he'll tell the story where I made like 10 threes in a game, which I don't remember that happening, but that probably had a lot to do with it.
Who else were you being recruited by, Pat? Because at the time, you know, for people listening, I mean, you said it, you know, Coach K was there. I'm sure Rick Pitino was in the gym. And, you know, yep. In these types of gyms back then, Nolan was a big damn deal. They were coming off, you know, really good seasons. Who else was recruiting you? And you went there. Was there any trepidation that you could play for Nolan Richardson and go there and see the floor?
Oh, absolutely. Well, you talk about all the guys there. You run up the court, you see Coach Richardson had these big cowboy boots he would wear. And they had a big R. I remember them like it was yesterday. It was a huge R because they just won the national championship. This was June of 94, July 94. So when he called me in my hotel room, I was like, you know, matter of fact, the first time he called my house when I got back from the trip, you know, my father answered. He thought somebody was pranking us. He was like, this is not Coach Richardson. But it's funny you say it, because so me, my mother, my father, my sister, hop in my father rented a caravan. We drive from Everett to Fayetteville.
Wow.
So we're driving through the city. Fellas, I'm not used to the smell of like cows and chickens. We got stuck behind a chicken truck. I was like, there's no way. So we go to eat. I told my parents, I said, there's no way I'm staying here. I'm out of here. My father looked at me. He said, back home, they are saying you wouldn't last a week. And I was at that point, I was like, all right. So I got my paper out. I wrote down my goals. Didn't know what they were going to be my freshman year. But I just battled through it, and it was tough. You know how it is when you,
yes,
because you're joining a family, a team, but you have to figure out what role you are in that team,
and you're going no matter what. It's hard to explain to people going from high school into a college weight room. And where guys have already had 2, 3, 4 years of conditioning and weight training. Did you find that to be as tough as I did? I thought it was.
Absolutely. It was because, I mean, they were still, I mean, just the amount of weight that they could lift. I mean, it was Tim. Right. I can remember, you know, we had a point guard, Kareem Reed, from the Bronx. I mean, you know, he's the kind of guy that walks by a weight room and his muscles just start activating. I mean, he's doing like 25 pull-ups. I'm like, gosh. I could do 2, maybe.
I could do the bar. I could, if whatever the bar was with no weights on it, I could do the bar.
It was funny because Coach Richardson was very old school. So he was more of get your conditioning and your strength training on the court.
Right.
So we would do, you know, we would throw the medicine ball. We would, you know, do a lot of running with weight vests. We had like, I don't know, 30-pound weight vests on our back, just old school stuff like that. So I didn't get embarrassed as much as I probably would have in the weight room, but I did on the court.
When did you realize, Pat, when did you realize you were a special shooter? Like, you're probably a lot like Josh and I. We went from baseball, basketball, football. I swam, you know, but at some point I remember, like, I would get in PE class and I excelled. When did you realize, man, I have pretty good touch here?
And I think this is something that I tell, like, a lot of players now. It's about, like, how do you get more minutes? So how do you stay on the floor? How do you get on the floor, stay on the floor? For me, I noticed probably in the eighth grade, because normally my game was, you know, watching the guys in the NBA, you know, rebound, pass, shoot, dribble, do it all. But I noticed probably, you know, around the eighth grade, how I found something that if I could be the best at this, this could separate me. And so it was kind of at that age that it clicked with me, like, so I really focused on that. And I mean, you know how it is, man. We would hide.
Yeah.
With the custodian would leave the school, lock it up, cut the lights out, and I'd sneak out from out the bleachers, cut the lights back on, and just shoot. And it's so it was probably like eighth, ninth grade. I figured that if I can just do this, and I'm sure you guys have something like this, because you guys are great at what you do and a lot of things. Like, you have to have that ability to do something over and over and over and over and over and over again. Like, you know, I just love sitting there. I love the sound of the swish. I love the motion. I mean, everywhere I go, I'm carrying the rock with me. You know what I'm saying? Yeah. So anytime, I think you really have to love it. You really have to fall in love with the process.
The Rex Chapman Show is sponsored by Fliff. Fliff is a social sports book with a chance to win cash prizes. Fliff customers can purchase Fliff coins, and then as a bonus, Fliff awards free Fliff cash with their purchase. Fliff is the only sports book that gives you free coins and cash daily. Sign up for Fliff, the social sports book. What makes us different, you ask? Fliff is a free-to-play sports book that awards real cash and prizes. Use the code BBNEWS for a 100% match bonus. No sports betting in your state? Try Fliff. You know, you said that so beautifully, and you picked that ball up. I've been through some addiction and all kinds of messy stuff. Anyway, after that, I was coming back and I started speaking some to groups. And at first, somebody had a ball and I just grabbed the ball, and it made the speaking so much easier.
Yeah.
And I started traveling with the ball for a while, because you're talking about some painful stuff, you know, but that ball, you know, you've got it right there. It's just when you spend that much time with something. And we just had Mahmoud Abdul-Rauf, Chris Jackson, on last week, and he was talking about much the same. He's got Tourette's, and his habits and rituals are, you know, maybe more extreme. But you said it right. You trade to be really good at something. You trade some sanity. You know, you're in the gym an unhealthy amount. You're doing something obsessively, right?
But it's therapeutic. Yeah, I still today go, like, I have to go to the park or the gym, and I gotta shoot. It's just something that's like great in your brain.
Yeah.
It helps me, you know. It's sort of whatever it is, you know, my whatever. It's just
your mojo, man.
You know, we've had some incredible shooters on this podcast. Yeah, I can't even think of them all right now, but we've had
James Jones, Stephen Curry, James Jones,
JJ Redick,
JJ, Steve Kerr, Pat Bradley. No, we've had some others too. Shaq. Not shooter. But we've had some good ones.
But they all have this very leaning towards OCD with it. JJ was definitely like, I've got tendencies that are more than OCD tendencies, you know, I haven't been diagnosed, but all of them, especially Mahmoud, he credits in part his Tourette's for his, you know, greatness, because he couldn't leave without, you know, if he barely did it wrong, he had to do it 100 more times. Like, it was not fun for him. It was hardly therapeutic. But all these great shooters could, including yourself, we've had those stories, sneaking out, you know, and then turning the lights back on and just doing it over and over and over again.
So it's funny you say that, how part of it isn't therapeutic, in a sense. Like, so I had heard a story. My high school coach had told me George Gervin, the Iceman, finished every one of his workouts with the perfect swish, and he'd loop the net.
Mm.
We called it swooshing.
Okay. Yeah. Mm-hmm.
So I couldn't leave. There were six hoops.
So hard to do.
I couldn't leave until all of them were swooshed.
All of them?
So they would, you know, my coach would know when he came in the morning if I was there shooting, because they had all, but it was like insane, because you had to get it done.
That's amazing.
I'll give you a nice trick that my high school coach, Coach DiBiase, used on me. He would meet me at the gym, open it up, and say, Patrick, I got to run out. I'll be back in 20 minutes. You better be shooting still when I come back here. He wouldn't come back for 4 hours. And so, but I didn't want to stop shooting because if he came walking in the gym.
That's right. You didn't want to be caught that way. Pat, talk for a second about, I find it fascinating because shooters are funny in that, you know, you can just get hot, out of your mind hot. And yeah. I want to know, you know, sort of what that feeling's like for you. And if you remember a game or two in college or whatnot, where, you know, it's just that, I guess it's probably similar for everybody who can just go on a tear and kind of, but you have to be willing to, you know, gamble and go unconscious like that. I can remember feeling like, hey, draw up whatever you want to draw up. Just if it touches my hand, it'll go in. Don't worry about that, you know, because you're in that part of your brain. Talk to me about that and how it was for you getting that way.
Yeah, and you're right about how, you know, just touching the ball, right? And you know how it is when everything's clicking. And I feel like, in another thing, when I'm talking to younger players, it's like you have to. I've seen so many guys who were great shooters. They touch it in the game, and they don't even look at the rim. They just swing it. And I'm like, you have to have the other side of it. Mm. Like, I think it's probably not good to say, but I always thought a bad shot for me was a much better shot than anyone else's.
Yeah.
No. Bad shot for me is a much better than any one of your shots.
No, there's some truth to that. When you're one of those scorers on your team, that's definitely
true. There's a gift to that too, a psychological gift to that. For the you guys also, you got to have this ability to go do something over and over again, but then also have the ability to you've missed five and just crank up the six. I was saying I was like, I never had, if I shot a three and missed, I was just like, I'm so sorry. Sorry, guys. That's my. It's on me. And like, I almost needed to come out and be like, I can't believe I should have passed. Like, it's a skill to be able to do that. It's a mindset. What, how do you get that? Just putting in the hours.
It is. And you know, it's funny. Like, my older brother is, he's pretty tough. And so he's somebody that no matter what, he's always kind of drilled into my head. Like, you got to keep shooting. You can make it. So when I did have teammates who, like you, you feel like you let them down when you miss a shot, I always had, like, in my head, I guess was driven in that I have to do something to help. I got to keep shooting. I got to make up for it. I got to help them. And I had some pretty tough teammates where, in terms of you know, point guard, he throws it to you. He expects you to make that shot. He wants that assist. He wants that. So, Josh, I kind of hope I answered it like in terms of the battle of I've got to make up for it versus I let them down. It's you know what I mean? It's a kind of a strange
thing. Of course. Let me ask you both this because you're both, you know, great basketball players and got in the zone. You know, we've all been in the zone. Mine was just at the Y. And I'm like, no one's here to see it. But like, what do you think? When do you know you've got it that day? Like, is it warm-ups? You're just like, dang, or is it the first shot once the game starts? Like, when do you know? I'm feeling it. I'm feeling it.
I want to hear what Pat has. For me, I never knew. I you know, almost, it's almost like when you least expect it, when you're sick with the flu or something like that, you know, where you're not even thinking about the game. You're just got some injury that's going on and then you're out of your mind just because you're not thinking. What about you, Pat?
Yeah, it's funny because there's been games. I had great warm up. Feel good. And then you just can't find your rhythm. I almost, you know, that's the thing that's beautiful about sports is, again, you know, I was a different kind of player where, you know, I almost had to try to trick the defense because I wasn't going to overpower them. I wouldn't. So there were games where I almost had to figure out within the defense. And that would help me have my better games. Because there are some guys who, some defenses that I played against that, I mean, I just couldn't get a shot. I mean, I couldn't get a shot off. You know, I mean, you know how it is. I mean, it probably didn't happen often, Rex.
I remember as a freshman getting my ass kicked by bigger, stronger guys. You know, just, I couldn't get free. They were holding and grabbing, and I'm not strong enough, guys. I'm sorry.
You just try not to turn the ball over.
Yeah.
You go in the locker room, you got the smell, the scratches. Fingernail scratches. Oh, Josh, it was brutal, man. I had to like take two showers after that. Just
Well, you talked about how Nolan got you there, but what was it like for you? Like just colloquialisms and cuisine in Arkansas and local just yes, ma'am. No, ma'am. I don't know if that was different. When I moved to New York, I was just becoming a man, like 22. And I would say, yes, ma'am, to someone. And they were like, fuck you, you smart ass son of a bitch. You know, I was like, what? I don't know. I couldn't get a sandwich, you know, at the deli because they'd be like, who's next? I'd be like, hey, I'm next over here. Fuck you, guy. Yeah, I was like, oh, okay, sorry. Right. So there had to be those moments for you in Arkansas.
Oh, it was funny because I had to change the way I spoke because people couldn't understand me. You know, you're talking about whatever it could be, getting oil in your car. You know, to me, it's oil.
Yeah.
To them, it's
all.
And
that's funny.
So I had to figure out. So that's why, like, I can sympathize. I don't know if you guys, you know, Brian Kelly, the LSU football coach.
Oh, yeah.
Everybody gave him a hard time.
He was trying.
Coincidentally, he actually grew up in Everett. He's a Boston guy. I don't know him. I want to meet him. But I can sympathize because you have to figure out to speak differently.
Yeah.
And I mean, I couldn't get a good calzone. I couldn't get a good meatball down there.
It's like the only place you're going to get a calzone is if you're in a mall and they got a Sbarro or whatever. Right. What is the place?
Right. Sbarro. Yeah. Great call. Great pull.
So, but like, you know, even like the fashion, overall.
Oh, yeah.
I mean, I'm like, are you joking? You can't be wearing that in public.
Did you wear any overalls?
No, I never did. I got a cowboy hat somewhere around here. Somebody gave me a cowboy. It was fun. I'll be honest with you though. I was so lucky to go through that. Like, both of you guys have had the experiences of taking yourself out of your comfort zone and going into a completely different atmosphere, environment. Man, I feel so fortunate that I got that at a young age. I really, really do. I mean, you have to go through these things. You can't tell somebody how to prepare. You just got to go through it. And, it was something else, man. I love those people in Arkansas, you know.
You know, you said it so right. Josh and I talked about it, of course, a lot on this show, but, you know, just the things you go through in sports, being in a locker room with people from every different background and socioeconomic background, race, religion, when you're going through things in a locker room, preseason conditioning, you're all throwing up together. You leave and you wipe your mouth off, you go shower and you go eat together and you learn about one another. When you're going through all of that stuff together, and you don't realize it, the education that you're getting, that's the good stuff. And you take that with you forever.
There's
everything's not great about college athletics. I get it. But there's a lot good about college athletics, and I wouldn't trade it for, you know, much in the world.
The guys, I saw a couple of them a couple weeks ago. I still keep up with all of them. You know, we do come from all different backgrounds, but I think it's, that is the beauty of it. You know, it's funny. I think, great coaches, all coaches understand that you have to do something with that team, make it difficult. You said preseason condition, because when you go through something difficult as a unit, it makes you even more together. And I remember Coach Richardson, I don't know if he ever admitted to it, but I knew he did this because he was a master psychologist. He pissed us off as a team on purpose so that as a team, he could be our enemy and we would come together as one. And he didn't mind. He was like, all right, I got to get these guys on the same page. You know what? Let me create. I'm going to create the enemy. I'm going to be, then, you know, once he saw we were together, he kind of let up on us a little bit. And, but you're right, man. It's funny how those challenges actually brought us together and, you know, bring everyone together.
Did you always want to go into broadcasting afterwards?
You know, naturally I'm shy, right? But when I was playing, I mean, what else am I going to do? I was thinking, like, when I was in college, I'm like, what am I going to do with my life? And so, fortunately, basketball provided the, road. And again, I'm extremely fortunate. You look at the late 90s, or even, like, so I can remember as early as, when I really got into watching college basketball was the early 90s, right? Maybe the late 80s, early 90s, right? You had UNLV, those teams. Mm-hmm. Of course, the game with Kentucky and Coach K and Rex and your teams. And so in the next, 20, 25 years, look where we're at. So I'm so fortunate. So Josh, yes, in college, I did want to, and I'll say one thing quickly about that. We did have any media policy. So in other words, after games, Coach Richardson basically opened the door of the locker room and every and all reporters went straight into the locker room and we had to sit. He made us sit there and answer every question,
Wow.
And so I think that helped me.
Yeah.
Because and he told us in the locker room, he said, listen, you guys want to talk to these guys when you win, you better talk to them when you lose. And some guys would get dressed quick and run out. But after a while, I started liking it. I said to myself, Josh, you know what I said? At some point in my life, nobody is going to care or want to know what I have to say, I better take advantage of it now. So that is kind of
ahead of your time. Ahead of your time, Pat.
But you know, Pat, you make such a great point. And, you know, it, even going back to holding that basketball there, you can see, I was very introverted, and or especially around people, strangers and groups, and I knew people recognized me and stuff. But when I think back on the court, I appeared happy because I was happy. That was the most confident place I was. And when I go watch players play, young players, I can think off the top of my head, I'll go watch Kentucky players because Josh and I are eating up like that, you know, dying to know if can these kids really play or not. And the first thing I look at is how are they able to compete out there and have fun? How do they appear in warmups? Are they talking with the managers? Are they buddies with the managers? All that stuff. Tyler Hero, Bam Adebayo, Tyrese Maxey, Shai Alexander, all those guys, they fit that bill. And they're guys who just have fun. They have fun when they're on the court. And you fit right into that mold. You took what you did seriously, but you felt at home when you were out there on that basketball floor, didn't you?
Yeah. It was. And a lot of it was because, like, watching the success of everybody, you know, I feel like, I don't know what it is. I don't know how you guys feel. You probably feel the same way. You want the people you love to be happy. And it's crazy. Like Rex, obviously we play basketball. Josh, I'm curious with you, like when people see you, do you in a movie or a show, and that, you know, they're proud of you. Is there, how much of you like knows and understands that what you're doing is making them happy? And do you feel that at times you go the extra mile just because you know you're going to make them happy?
Hey, wow. Don't turn everything on me, Pat. I know. Okay. I get that. You know, there's so many times afterwards, and now people come up and say, you know, I was dealing with this then, and that show got me through that. And people, and you're like, you know, on the day that they're talking about the show 10 years ago that I was on set, I didn't know this moment would really impact anyone, you know, a stupid joke or something, but I always took it seriously like that, you know, like that it could possibly. But you guys get that instant reaction of the fans as soon as it happens. You make 15,000 people excited at once. What's that feel like to hit a dagger to win a game?
I don't know how you replace, like, Rex, I don't know if you've figured out how.
I'll tell you. You go ahead and explain, and then I'll tell you real quick what I think and how I dealt with it.
Yeah, because it is. It is, there's nothing like, I guess I found out how to replace it. I don't know. But it's to know and hear the sound of that crowd and know the emotion and passion. And then you feel like everybody is with you. It's just, it is, man, it's intoxicating.
And I'll take it a step. You said it perfectly, but I'll take it a step further in that, you know what it's like in practice, Pat. You know, you're playing the red against the white and your coaches, you know, you're scrimmaging, right? And this happens every day of the week and they're trying to stop you and you come off in practice and you bust one in somebody's face and you're thinking, fuck you, right? And that's a feeling. That's a feeling that you get. It's also a feeling that's addictive. And when you've been doing that since you're 10 years old in the playground with your brother, with whoever it is, when that stops, you're going to miss it. And guess what? I had no idea about that. Had no clue. And when it went away, I think I just filled it with painkillers. And I had no idea how to... You know, I had other stuff going on too, but people don't understand what a thrill, you know, it's just a, competitive thing that you either have or you don't have.
Right. I wonder for you, for both of you guys, your motivation to do what you did. You love what you do, but was there a motivation of impressing people? And because I can remember early, you know, maybe in high school, you know, you walk through the halls and everybody's like, wow. I mean, there's a motivation in being great based on the reception you get from other people.
Sure.
Yeah. Like, I don't know if, how many people thought the way I doubt.
No,
like,
I think that's
just,
true.
This girl's talking to me. I just had 30 last night. I want to get to the gym. Let me get to the gym and keep working.
All the benefits that go along with it. But no, I got to see, you had an older brother who played and did all that. My dad played ball. He played in college, played in the old ABA. I asked Josh all the time. He left and went to become an actor. Nobody in his family did that. Nobody done that. That's, to me, that's brave to go off and try to do something you've not seen anyone in your whole world do before.
Well, the vulnerability.
To
me is insane. Like, we were part of a team. Like, Josh, I can't even imagine putting it all out there.
Same.
In a world in acting where it's like, you can be as good as anybody, but if that they don't like you, I don't even know how you would deal with that.
I think the other part about that too, Pat, is that, you know, you've got to have a requisite amount of quickness or timing or athletic ability or what to play sports. Everybody thinks they can act. Everybody thinks, well, I could go in there and you blah, 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 blah.
Just read the lines.
Yeah. But the thing that I've read lines with Josh before, years ago, and I can't get through it because I'm not a fucking actor, but I can't get through it because I'm laughing the whole time, or I'll laugh at how he's doing whatever he's going to do. And, you know, that they don't do that.
Right.
They are there on a team, like they're in practice and they're being serious about this. That's the part that blows me away. That trust is, it's a different thing than you and I can imagine.
That's all very nice. But let's face it. I'm just really fucking good looking. You know what? I told, you know, a lot of friends and people say, man, that was so ballsy to just pick up and go. And I'll be like, it wasn't that ballsy, because it's not like, say you come to a ravine and there's a rickety, rickety little, you know, bridge and it's worn out and you got to cross that to get over to the other side. Well, if you do that's ballsy. But it's not as ballsy when the jungle behind you is on fire. And that's how I felt. I couldn't stay here. This was not, there's nothing for me here. So it wasn't balls. It was just like, I have to go. I have to cross this thing and do it.
Did you have, was it like acting or something else? Was it like, I'm going to be, you know, make a difference in this world somehow, some way, or was it always acting?
It was, as from a young kid, I said I want to be an actor or a pro football player. And I got to play a pro football player, so that's all good.
This podcast is brought to you by Branded Bills, the best place online for premium headwear and apparel. Branded Bills has hundreds of designs available, including our popular state collection, where you can show your pride with hats, shirts, hoodies, and more for all 50 states. Are you a company looking to brand your business? Branded Bills also offers custom apparel options that can meet your brand standards with fast turnaround and shipping. To shop or learn more, visit brandedbills.com today.
Get ready for the greatest roast of all time, the Roast of Tom Brady, a Netflix live event happening May 5th. Hosted by Kevin Hart, the seven-time world champion gets his cleats held to the fire by famous friends and frenemies on an unforgettable night where everything is fair game. Tune in on May 5th at 5 p.m. Pacific time for The Roast of Tom Brady, live only on Netflix.
Mother's Day is around the corner. Find the perfect gift for the mom in your life with a stunning piece of jewelry from Blue Nile. From timeless pearls to dazzling gemstones, Blue Nile has something she'll adore. Need it fast? Most items can ship overnight. Plus, enjoy guaranteed free shipping and returns. Don't miss our special Mother's Day deals. Save big on the season's most beautiful trends. For a limited time, get up to 50% off by going to BlueNile.com. That's BlueNile.com.
Sports. Josh's best friends. You know, Josh is a couple years younger than I am. But he grew up going baseball, basketball, football with his homeboys, and his homeboys in middle school and high school, they're still best friends. They still talk every day, group text and all that. There's just nothing that can replace that. It doesn't matter whether it's the eighth grade softball team or, you know, a pro football team. That camaraderie because teamwork is so vital, especially in a team sport, you learn some of the most valuable lessons on being what a good teammate and bad teammate look like. Right. I mean, most people want to do right. But some people just can't help but being bad teammates. And you learn that really early on. What's tolerable and what's not.
I'll be honest with you. I still think about those times when I wasn't as good of a teammate as I should have been. And we probably could have won more games.
Same.
And, you know, just the unselfishness or.
Yep. In your feelings for whatever reason. Right.
Yeah. Right. Yes. Yeah. Yeah. It is. I mean, that's the one thing that probably, you know, I always try to get out of my own head. It's not about me. It's not about me. It's not about me.
Right. Get out of your own head. Yeah.
Somebody reminded me the other day, we were playing Notre Dame. It was my sophomore year, I think. And we were playing a really good Notre Dame team coached by Digger Phelps. They had David Rivers. Mm-hmm. They had a good team. And I played the first half of that game on strike. Eddie, our coach, had said something in the media before the game. And I think I took like two shots in the first half. Somebody pass it to me, I'd pass it back. I played on strike. And I to this day, and then in the second half, you know, he jumped my ass at halftime and I played well. But I just think about it now going, you fucking idiot.
Who's that, Coach Sutton?
Coach Sutton, national televised game. What everybody would love to be doing right now, and you're just out here like an asshole.
Right. He was tough.
You still think about that.
Yeah.
To this day, you're like,
yeah. I mean, we won the game and all that, but what if we hadn't? What if we hadn't? I played a half of a basketball game on the offensive end on strike.
That's funny. Pat, both of you guys talk about seeing the joy and a player know he's going to be good because he loves it. That's the feeling I get when I see you on the SEC Network talking about basketball now. And that's why you're so good at it. And
I appreciate
it. Do you feel that joy? Do you love what you do? Is there a passion for it now?
I love it, man. And I think, like, I love meeting and talking to people. I particularly love, like, really getting to know these players, because the older I get, the more I realize how they're only in that position for a short amount of time. Mm-hmm. 1 year, 2 years, 3 years, 4 years, some guys at 5 or 6 years, but it's a small time. So I take it serious to want to make sure I highlight them, their families, because I've seen in my own life how the basketball impacted my entire family.
Yeah,
like sure. The travel, the everything that they put, you know, my mother still got like pictures of us playing all over the house and things like that. So I think for me, like, I love basketball, but I almost look at it as the people playing, because it's fun. Yeah, breaking down the X's and O's. But honestly, there's a fine line of being informative but entertaining, And I try to mesh the two to be informative and entertaining, because sometimes, you know, you can over-explain or get too technical. So there is a fine line, I think, in TV with analyzing it, where you got to be both. But I honestly enjoy this talking about the success of these players, because I know the impact it has on their families.
Yeah, you know, you do a great job. I watch you, and I think the good mark is when you're not nervous for the person that you're watching and listening to, and you just make it sound easy and effortless. And you said it right. You know, these young men and women didn't just show up on campus. You know, you came from Everett, Mass. A lot went on in Everett, Mass before you ever stepped foot on a basketball floor at Fayetteville. And those are the stories you're trying to tell, right? You know, you want to tell how those guys got here. Man, we could talk to you about this all day. You got to come back and do this. Josh and I have a couple more questions real quick,
though. No, I got a couple more.
Oh, you do? Go ahead.
Here we got the SEC guy. I want to know a little bit about the season coming up here.
Yes, sir.
First of all, your Razorbacks are going to be really good and different for Musselman than they've been in the past, because he's had like some transfers and, you know, he put teams together, really good teams that way. Now he's got the best recruiting class in the country coming in. And Nick Smith Jr.
That
from everything.
It hurts you to say that it's not Kentucky.
Yes, it does. Yes, it does. But next year we're putting together quite a class. But what's it going to be?
Is a beast.
Oh yeah. Oh, I love our team, and I'll get to that. But how's Musselman gonna do, you know, teaching these young kids rather than having some experience around? And Nick Smith Jr., you've watched him enough. Is he's the real deal?
Yeah. I'll talk about Nick Smith Jr. quick. 6'5". He has the wide shoulders, length. So he's got the build. He's got enough speed, enough athleticism. But really, I think he's got a legitimate three-point shot. But really what separates him and the reason why he is talked about so much, he is always in attack mode. Something to go back to earlier, what we were talking about, you know, he's not catching and just moving the ball. He's catching and he's looking to attack you. So, I mean, he's probably going to lead the league or be up there in free throw attempts, because he's always in attack mode. So he's got the body and the mind. And as 18-year-old, which I think he's 18, to have that mentality is pretty impressive, especially on that level.
Well, Anthony Black and Jordan Walsh, right? Those two. I mean, those are two 5-star kids too. I mean, this is a real impressive roster.
Wow. Yeah.
Do you think they could win the SEC?
They could, in the challenge, and nobody's better than Coach Musselman at taking first-year guys, whether it be freshmen or transfers, and putting them together. He's been doing it since the CBA. He set a record. I forget what year it was. He was like the general manager, head coach in the CBA in like the early 90s.
I think he's got a plan. He knows too. These guys,
they're
hungry. They're hungry. Yeah. They're coming in here with something to prove. I've been watching him do this for decades now.
Well, Rex, he set a record by amount of players that he cut and signed like in 1 week. There was like 50 of them. So if anybody can put together different moving parts, it's him. Now you got to feed the monster. You created this monster back-to-back Elite Eights. You got to feed it, because that's what now everyone's like, Final Four. It's it doesn't happen. It doesn't happen like that. You know, I mean, it's the March Madness. We'll get into that another day. You know, it's a whole different animal, that tournament. Yeah. Buddy, I don't want to bring up old stuff, as you know.
New old stuff.
Anything can happen in that tournament.
Yes. Yes, we do. Well, we'll just talk about our Cats for a little while. I mean, we've got an impressive lineup too, don't we?
You know, watching that exhibition game, two guys start, obviously big Oscar Shibuye didn't play.
Right.
Oscar last year was no doubt National Player of the Year, SEC Player of the Year, because he was the most consistent player in college basketball. Every time you could depend on that dude, to give you that double-double. He's going to protect the rim. And this year, I'm hoping, and I know he will. He's worked on his jump shot, so he's going to be able to make that 15, 17-foot shot. But the two guys that stood out to me is C.J. Frederick, the shooter,
yeah,
and Caden Wallace. That dude's 6'4", running the point. 6'4". Like,
built like an NBA player.
Yeah.
Yeah. And Xavier Wheeler and he, a great combination, because Xavier can get down on you 94 feet, affect the game defensively, slice through the, I mean, they give you two different looks.
Yeah.
And then if CJ can, he shot the lights out the other night. I mean, this dude, you're talking about a career 45% 3-point shooter. So you add those two pieces for Kentucky, because you're always going to have length, athleticism, right. You know, Lance Ware, Damian Collins, those guys are going to give you
Toppin, Jacob Toppin. I mean, it's a deep and old team for Cal, you know, and with Oscar, I keep going back. Somebody asked me today and I'm like, well, I mean, I don't see why he doesn't do the same thing he did last year is the same. I mean, he's going to rebound, you know, he's going to get 15 rebounds a game. He's going to get 15 points a game. That's what he does. If he could shoot it, he wouldn't be playing in college right now.
Right.
Yeah. So,
I think for him, CJ is going to help him as a shooter.
Agreed.
Even Jacob Toppin, he's, for everything I can tell, he's shooting it better. And he seems like the kind of kid that knows what his weaknesses are. I'm going to improve on that. So, I mean, it's, and let's face it, last year, Kentucky's a Final Four national championship type talent team. I mean, you know, St. Peter had the greatest game in the history of their existence, okay? Or we're talking about Kentucky, you know, going back to Final Four. And they're better this year, okay? As much as I love
Ty. You do. You think they're better.
I do because.
I do, too.
Yeah. I do, too, but I want to hear why smart people think that.
Yeah, good point.
Well, not to mention that you're getting Xavier back, you know, a year older doesn't always mean a year better. But, I mean, Xavier is going to have a better shooting year this year. Oscar is back. He's improved. Then you add in, you know, CJ was hurt last year.
Mm-hmm.
You imagine him last year playing? I mean, Kellen Grady, I love. Another Boston guy. So you lose some of those pieces with Ty and Kellen. But I think what you bring in, certainly, you know, we'll have to wait and see. The production Kellen had was, and Ty obviously was off the charts. But I think those guys can give you what they did. And you add in what your veterans were.
Great. Pat, what's your favorite movie?
The Perfect Storm.
Great answer. Gloucester. They're always from Gloucester.
second maybe, I don't know, Rocky, The Godfather.
Okay.
You know.
The Departed.
The Fighter. Fighter the other day. Mickey Wood. Christian Bale does an unbelievable job in that movie, The Fighter.
He does.
All right. What about you front row center for any entertainer or athletic or speaker, whatever, dead or alive, your front row center?
I always wanted to go. So Stevie Wonder, Johnny Cash.
Okay.
I know I can't see Johnny Cash anymore. I did see Stevie Wonder in concert. I wasn't front row center. I will say this. Probably the best sporting event I've ever been to was the middleweight championship fight. It was Jermaine Taylor and Bernard Hopkins.
Fantastic.
Oh, man. Yeah.
Nothing like a championship fight. I mean, nothing. Yeah. Like, it's electric. I mean, because that, boom, it could be over like that. Yeah. So
good.
If no one's had a chance to go to a championship fight, I would suggest do that.
Well, so would you say maybe, what if you could see Muhammad Ali front row center? Would you? Would
that... If you give me that,
all right, that,
okay,
absolutely,
yeah, there absolutely. We go. There we go.
Good answer,
Patrick.
That's right,
Henry,
Louisville guy. That's right.
I forgot about that.
Yeah, Louisville.
Uh-huh. That's right. Pat,
by the way, do I say that the right way? Is it Louisville?
Depending on where I am, I say Louisville. If I'm at home, I say Louisville.
Louisville. Yeah, Louisville.
Yeah, it's kind of like the oil and all thing.
Yeah. But Louisville. If you're in front of a real, if you were in Louisville and you're like, "Hey, I love Louisville," they're like,
"Woo."
yeah, you can't eat here. Yeah.
Thanks, Pat. Come back and do this again, okay?
Love you guys. You guys.
Look forward to seeing you this year. Can't wait to see you at halftime. I'll be there, every one of them.
Oh, I love it. I'm going to give you guys shout outs.
All right, please do. All right. Thanks, Pat. Great to talk to you, man. Thank you.
Love
you, boys. Pat Bradley, what a guy.
That was fun. That was a lot of fun. Great energy with that.
Love the accent.
Oh, perfect.
I love it. Every now and then he'd slip in there and get a little deeper. So when he's talking shit, it's good Boston shit.
Yeah. Right? Yeah. It's always fun to, you know, at the halftime of the SEC network games to hear him speaking like, what the hell?
Yeah,
SEC network. He's great too. He really is good.
He gives him a little. What was the coach at Connecticut? Jim Calhoun. I can barely understand anything Jim can say, but I love it.
Anything he says,
he's got that thick Massachusetts accent.
Yeah, it's funny to hear him though. Also, it's like it's this job, but I mean, he just runs down the Kentucky lineup like nothing. That's not his favorite. I mean, he could do that with LSU. He could do that, right? I mean, knowledgeable and can retain it. I'd have to have note cards every time.
I have to for our team. I could have had him break down everybody. We may have to have him back. We need to have he and Jeff Goodman on at the same time.
Yeah, that would be fun. That would be a lot of fun.
All right, buddy. Do it again next week?
Yes, sir. I'd love to.
All right. That was Pat Bradley. Join us back here next week for the next episode of The Rex Chapman Show with my super dope homeboy from the Lextown, Josh Hopkins, powered by basketballnews.com.